everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out a Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, the Damian Abraham, and your other host, as always, is the Chris O'Toole. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Dame. How are you?
I'm doing good. I rushed you on the air because there's like all these things I wanted to talk about, but I'm like, fuck, we're going to have to talk about them twice if we talk about them before. Like, I've got, you know, like I got stuff that happened today that I want to talk about. You know, you and me both went on trips. I was going to ask you about beforehand, but I'm like, no, I'm going to have to ask you about it on the air. So I'm like, we'll just save it all on the air, Chris.
Sure. Yeah.
First of all, how are you doing, bud?
Good, man. Always the same. nothing to report.
Well, there is something to report because judging by this non-existent social media, but you were away.
I was away. Correct. Yeah. Just a little weekend trip, but I was in New York for the weekend. I was not. Was it this weekend? Was the Misfits or no?
I think it was, right?
I think it was. I was joking that that's why I was there, but I was not there for that. But yeah, no, I didn't, nor did I see a Misfit around town. any Misfit of any kind, although ironically enough, as a strange twist of fate would have it, I arrived back home on Sunday and I could have, I believe it was Sunday he played, if not, it was Saturday, but, Michael Graves played, essentially locally where I am.
Yeah.
And, it was, it was interesting. I didn't get a chance to go out, but I saw some things, like I have a friend who did sound for it and stuff, and it looked like you would expect. But yeah, so weirdly enough, I make a joke about not seeing a Misfit, but I could have seen, you know, quote unquote, a Misfit in my neck of the woods even.
Was it packed?
It was busy. I don't know if I'd say packed. It's not a big, wasn't a big place, but, you know, busy enough. I believe it was a Sunday though, so I'm going to give every excuse in the book as to probably why not.
Do you remember the Michael Graves Daily Show clip?
I think this came out.
We talked about this, right?
Speak about this last week, I think. Yeah.
Was it last week?
Yeah. If not, it was, I don't know, it was recently, but, yeah, I must have seen it because I watched that show.
We did watch it on the air, I think, if I remember correctly now. It's all coming back to me through the haze of cannabis and concussions.
But I think I probably watched it at the time, and then I saw it again. We re-upped on it, whatever, last week. Yeah, it's strange.
It's strange. You know what? I haven't heard a single report out of that Misfits show at all. It might have not been last weekend.
I feel like I would have heard something, although... Yeah. We did know, I believe we knew someone who was going. I thought Dave was going. So I don't
Jasmine
know.
Jasmine was going too.
Who was going?
Jasmine, recent guest. Oh, okay. Jasmine, because she was, you know, going with Doyle, her sister, you know. I think they're married to Doyle, obviously. So a bunch of former guests.
In Jersey or New York?
It was in New Jersey.
I'm just trying to see if I can find the actual... No, it's this weekend, I think. Right. So maybe that's why.
There's like a lot of weird shit about that show, dude. Like the promotion of it. Like they're like featuring original lead singer Glenn Danzig, original bass player, and then it's like, and longtime guitar player Doyle.
Yeah, so the reason why we haven't seen anything is because it's this coming Saturday, the 19th. Okay. We're recording... on the 17th for listeners who want to dig deep. But yeah, so my joke fails on multiple levels. But nonetheless, I was not there for Misfits. I could have made a real big joke that I was going a week early for the Misfits. That would have been funnier, I guess.
Just pregame.
Yeah. I was already in line. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get that corpse paint on early.
Yep.
No, I would, you know, obviously if that show was in Toronto, or if I was in the city it was going on to and I had tickets, it would be a fun experience to go to a hardcore show or a punk show or whatever you define it that big.
Yeah, I think it's neat. I just like, you know, if the circumstances were completely right and I could walk in and it didn't cost me anything, I would have no issue. But
yeah, I also want to be in like that bubble that the guy from the Flaming Lips rolls around in. You know, so no one at the show could come near me.
My thing is just like, I've, you know, I think people listen to the show kind of know my my position on this. So I just don't really like, I would make no effort because it's not my thing.
Yeah.
You know, if we were talking about, you know, there's not many reunions, to be fair, that I freak out about too much anyway, but
I'm trying to think what kind of reunion I'd freak out for now.
I think I'm a little overdone them, so it's a difficult question to answer in 2018 because I think I would probably eye roll every single one of them. But you know, there are certainly ones I would make an effort to go to. I'm sure if like, although I hope it never happens and I don't expect it to ever happen, but if, like if Minor Threat did do it, yeah, I'd probably be into that.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't expect it to, and again, I hope it doesn't happen. But I couldn't. That's probably one I couldn't actually keep away from.
You got to think, like, as far as reunions go, what's left out there? Like, that could happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, it's like Minor Threat, which will never happen.
Yeah.
You know what was amazing in the 90s when there was that like, kind of, like, urban legend that would pop up every once in a while? They're like, you know, it's pre-internet, really, in the sense that you couldn't really fact-check this in any sort of ready way back then, but they would be like, oh, yeah, like last night at the Fugazi show for the encore, Ian came out holding the microphone and then they did a bunch of Minor Threat songs. You know, and that was like a persistent rumor and you hear about it happening in different cities. It was like that. And, oh, there's a guy in my town who works at the record store who smoked weed one time with Ian MacKay.
Oh, I've heard that was the one I've heard. I've never heard the one you said previous, but yeah, it doesn't shock me here. I'm curious if that actually ever did happen. My guess is it did. I mean, the former, not the latter. I'm guessing no.
But, never. Like, could you ever see, like, especially now that you, you know, like now that we, like, spent a little bit of time with him, obviously, on that much fabled Turned Out a Punk road trip. You know, like, could you ever picture him, like, being, like, backstage? Like, yeah, you know what I want to do tonight? Go out there and fucking sing some Minor Threat songs.
Yeah, no.
No way.
I don't think so on multiple levels, though. I don't think so on the level that I think that if anybody who's of a certain age that was able to see Fugazi operated as like very much to my, you know, whatever experience as a group. They took themselves, you know, of course, incredibly serious as that group. I don't really see them just being like, yeah, which, you know, we're just all just going to be like, yeah, do your thing now.
Yeah.
And like cover these songs. It seems
the crowd's going to start moshing and he's going to be into it.
Yeah. Or exactly. I never even thought of that, to be honest. I didn't play it through that far, but yeah, of course. Like it to be. Yeah. So I don't know. I just don't see that being the case, but yeah.
It would be the coolest thing if he did it and still enforce the no moshing policy and like stopped every time someone tried to mosh.
Yeah.
That would be the ultimate like head fuck for everyone. Like everyone has to stand there perfectly still.
Yeah. The, one of my favorite parts about that instrument documentary is the there's multiple people complaining in it about that.
Yeah.
But there's one like prominent dude that's like really pissed off about essentially like the moshing thing. And like, I can't remember the diatribe goes on. I just remember it being really funny. I haven't watched it in a while, so I'm assuming it plays even funnier 15 years later. But yeah, I don't know.
That's was it MVP?
Reason. No.
Do you remember his? Well, that was before we did footnotes, but like, that MVP Fugazi story is maybe one of the greatest stories ever told in the history
of way back podcast. When,
yeah, way back when on the first MVP one.
I'm wondering how many people have stories about being kicked out or chastised for that kind of behavior at a Fugazi show over the last, you know.
Oh, whatever, gosh. Yeah.
Decades.
I wonder if he like, I wonder if there's anyone ever like moshing and he's just like on stage. He's like, no, that style's too sick. I can't stop this person from moshing.
These are all future questions that you'll have to ask.
Ian, was there ever anyone in the pit that style was too sick to stop from moshing?
Yeah.
That would be if like Matt DeLong hosted this podcast when Matt DeLong was like 16.
Yeah, you're reinforcing why this Minor Threat reunion will never happen, and that makes me happy, to be honest.
Yeah, no, Minor Threat one will never, ever happen. Like, the only one that I'm now kind of convinced is a potential one to happen is the Operation Ivy one.
I would have expected that, though. I don't know why that wouldn't have. Why?
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, but I think perhaps some of that has to do with the fact that, you know,
I don't know. You got to figure people have tried.
I would think, yeah. No, that's a good point. I just never think about it. But yeah, that is one big one. I'm shocked that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, you had tales of travel to speak about and things. We already digressed.
Oh, well, yeah. No, this weekend, the fine folks at Vans had me out to the Forum Festival in Arizona to do a live Turn Out a Punk interview. It wasn't obviously like the show that Chris and I put on when we get to do the real Turn Out a Punk live experience, but these are these kind of awesome things that Vans gets me to do during the summer. Last year I got to do a couple of them. This summer there's going to be a few more. And this was one of them. I got to interview two artists, Horror and Vagabond. And it was awesome. Like it really felt like, to me, like what they're doing sonically has, you know, obviously Horror has a lot, I guess, of punk kind of influence in what they're doing, but like, you know, they're not doing straight up punk rock hardcore stuff, right? And yeah. Vagabond, like the stuff she's putting out is incredible, but like, you know, not immediate dead giveaway that it's influenced by punk and hardcore at all. But yet both groups kind of found, you know, like, I don't know, like entry to music through kind of like access to DIY venues and going to DIY shows in Brooklyn. And I don't know, like, it's just one of those things where you're like, ah, oh, this is exactly what this podcast is about. You know, like, it's about like how this is not necessarily something that you're going to take with you playing, you know, Screeching Weasel covers your whole life type thing. But at the same time, like, the stuff that you learn or the stuff that you see or just like even the way it inspires you to react against it, it's like, you know, this is stuff, you know, you carry with you your whole life. It ends up going weird places.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think that I think probably because you've done such a good job over all these interviews with the people that I expect to really have no connection of having either a much larger one or like a, you know, just always surprising me. Nowadays, I just assume that most people that come from anything or doing anything interesting came from something inspired by, you know, this subgenre, or however you want to characterize it. So I'm not surprised to hear that anymore. But yeah, it is. It's nice to see it continuing to happen in your interviews anyway.
No, this was, and it was a fun time. I also got to glamp.
Well, I don't know what that is.
That's glamorous camping, Chris.
Oh, okay.
It was in the desert. I was in a tent that had an air conditioning unit in it. I did not need to use it because I didn't know this. Should have known this. Don't know why I didn't think about this. But it gets fucking cold in a desert at night.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do know that factoid.
Yeah, like I think I knew it. I know I knew it. But for some reason, I didn't think about it.
I've never experienced it, thankfully, but yeah.
It's really cold.
Yeah.
Which was kind of reassuring because during the hot weather, people told me to watch out for scorpions.
Oh, yeah.
Did not want to see a scorpion. I had a lot of experience with that kind of stuff last summer. But, you know. But anyway.
What do you mean? You had experience with scorpions? What are you talking about?
In Mexico.
Okay.
And but it was it was a really fun time. It was got to hang out, ran into Dan Deacon.
Yeah, do you gotta elaborate about that?
Dude, this was legitimately what happened to me three times in the span of an hour. Yo, dude, Dan, that was an amazing set last night. Actually, the first one was even weirder because this dude came up to me, he's like, yo, dude, that was an amazing set last night. He says he said Dan later on, but I'm pretty sure he said dude. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's crazy. You were in Toronto last night because we played the subway station with Fucked Up. And he's like, yeah. no, you're Dan Deacon. And I'm like, no, dude, I'm not Dan Deacon. I'm Damien. He's like, no. I'm Damien. I'm not Dan Deacon. He's like, well, your voice sounds all fucked up. I'm like, yeah, because I played a show with my band last night in Toronto. Oh, you sure? And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm pretty sure I'm not Dan Deacon. And then this other person comes up to me and she's like, Dan, what's up? Amazing set last night, dude. I'm like, oh God, no, I'm not Dan Deacon. She's like, yes, you are. She's like, I'm like, no, I'm not. She's like, why are you pretending? You are. And I'm like,
oh my God,
I'm not. And like, she would not take no for an answer. And I got fed up with that one. I just stormed off. And then it happened again. And then I ran into the actual Dan Deacon.
That is amazing. Did you tell him these stories?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He and I have had some like interesting hangouts over the years. This time we actually got to hang out for real. But like other times, it's always been like the most random things. Like one time, we're at a hotel and I'm like trying to sleep because it was just after Holden was born, my first kid. And I'm like trying to sleep in the hotel before we play this show. And the phone keeps ringing. And all these people are like, hey, is Dan there? I'm like, no. And then like, hey, is Dan there? Like over and over again, this happens. And then there's like the sound of someone trying to get into the room and it's fucking Dan Deacon. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I thought this was my room. And I'm like, it's not. And how many people did you tell that it was? Cause it's being called like over and over again, dude. But yeah, no, he's a really nice guy and going to come on the show.
I find that super amusing that you don't, not only do you have one, but you have two like awkward Dan Deacon, you know, mistaken room story and a mistaken identity one. It's super funny.
It is. He is someone that, you know, I've gotten to spend like a lot of time with over the years at some festivals and things like that. And is like a real amazing person, you know, like has a really cool energy around them and stuff like that. But yeah, like we have had some awkward run-ins. Being mistaken for him, and then the room one as well. And then I was like, oh, you should come on my podcast because, you know, you came out of punk rock. He's like, well, I'm more from ska punk. And I'm like,
you're like, even
punk.
Better.
Yeah, I'm like, it's still punk. Don't worry, we can make it work. You know, it wouldn't be the first time that's, you know, like that's the thing I like about the show. And I no matter what your definition of punk is, whatever your punk definition of punk is, to you, that's the true definition. And like, no one's definition is going to be the true one, because like, we're all got such different opinions on what constitutes this genre. There's no rules, you know, like there's no 10 points that you check off on a checklist and then something's, you know, punk or isn't punk or things like that. It's like all defined by the listener.
Yeah, fair enough. I think there's people that would push back on that in specific.
I'm sure they would. But then, like, you could be like, listen, go talk to Ian MacKay. I guarantee you his definition of punk is going to be different than yours. And are you going to say he's not punk?
Well, I get what you're getting at. I just think there are probably certain hallmarks that people would describe punk as. But I know what you're saying. Like, when you're talking about people's perspective being that, that informs what punk is. It's like sort of like loosely a, you know, an artistic rebellion or what have you.
Yeah, like it's it could be anything. Like, you know, like obviously there's certain things that it probably isn't and shouldn't be, but at the same time, like it probably is those things to someone.
Maybe this is a really existential talk about punk right now. But yeah.
I've had a fun night, Chris. I saw the Melvins tonight, so I'm like, I'm all amped now, dude.
I can tell, yeah. I'm very envious that you're pals with the Melvins.
Well, I tell you, like, getting to just bother them, and, like, I got another kind of, here's another reveal for you. We record a little bit of a podcast, like Brian Walsby, Buzz and I.
Okay.
And it's there's a lot of fun stuff on it. It's a cool one. It's going to go up soon, I promise. But the stuff after the podcast where I'm just like, what about this band? What about this band? Like running through every obscure Pacific Northwest punk band I could think of and just hearing Buzz's take on them and what they were like live and stuff. Like, you know the band RPA?
I do not, no.
Okay, they have like a single. It's like a super rare single. It's not super rare, but yeah, it's, I think it actually is pretty super rare. Let me look it up on the resource. But anyway, he was saying it had features ex members of the Lewd, like from the original Lewd lineup.
And oh, weird.
This was the toughest band in that region. Like, they just come on stage and, like, you know, like kick people in the face and just like take no prisoners when it came to playing. Oh yeah, no, it is a pretty fucking rare record.
Crazy. No, I don't know it. Like, is it 80s or is it 70s or?
It's
80s. Post-Lewd, so it's probably 80s, I would
think. Yeah, I think it's 80. Oh, it says 81 to 84, but no one knows exactly when. According this is according to this on the resource.
Who are the Lewd connections? Is it a bunch of them or just one person?
He said it was two.
So I'm finding one here. The RPA, it just says RPA, Shoot the Pope is the A side and Bone
Brad Crusher Rammels. Yeah.
Not on a label. There is no year. Yeah. Crazy. Wow. No wonder if this is a lot of money. It is. There's not a lot of info on it.
No. I remember Discourage had, I think, quantity of these at some point and was like selling them with repost sleeves, if I remember correctly.
Hmm. Yeah, it's not a super pricey record, but it's, you know.
Pricey enough.
Self-relief. Wow. Yeah, I don't know this at all.
It's a good single.
If for people, yeah, RPA, if you look it up, it's the second entry in the resource. But there's also a YouTube rip, seemingly, of the records. The worst thing on the resource is when you look up statistics once you have found a record you want to look at, and especially when you want to know how much of a pain it's going to be to acquire, especially if it's a big money record. The first tell, if you're not looking at the actual price, is you look at the have versus the want. And if the statistic of the have is at half or less, you're in trouble. That's my observation. And this RPA record is that. And yeah, so you're in trouble. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, especially if you want this color photocopied sleeve version.
Of course. Of course.
But yeah, they definitely are, you know, one of those bands that I've, you know, never gotten to see, but that single, oof.
Good. I just find it amazing. There's no year on it. It just says 81, 84. It's a neat looking record. Like, never, the band photo things on the back are funny.
Yeah.
No, because it's not like a full band photo. It's like individual shots. And like the one is like dude standing in. It looks like, I don't know, I want to say a beach maybe or something. Yeah, it
looks like kind of like a beach.
The guitar player, dude, and then the rest of them are just like, it's like kind of a brick wall shot, live shot of the singer, dude. And then the bass player is just lounging on some like dark thing, but yeah.
Oh, it's a guy from Soldier, too, is a singer. I totally forgot about that.
Cool.
Doug Rothness.
Yeah, what a name. Hope that's a real name, by the way, too.
Sick name.
Yeah. But the single does look cool. I'm going to check this out as soon as we get done this.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. Definitely a classic. But yeah, that was pretty awesome seeing the Melvins tonight. They got the two bass lineup right now going on with Pincus and Jeff McDonald. And yeah, that band is never boring.
No, it's would be different. Like, it'd be impossible to be. They have they could go so many directions because they have such a long ass catalog. They could do, like, again, I saw them only once and 18, 19 years ago now. And they did two sets and they were like drastically different to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And they were incredible. They did basically like a sort of classic doomy heavy era, like Melvin stuff. And then they did a really fun, at the time it was like those three, the Bootlicker, the Crybaby, whatever those Ipecac, the three
LP, yeah, the trilogy.
There we go. And they did like a set of that where I think they even covered, I don't know if they covered Teen Spirit.
Yeah, I think they did it on one of those records. So well, that they did it on sense.
The record, but I think they did it live.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They did a lot of weird stuff, but it was like fun. It was like that kind of stuff. So it was, yeah, they can go many directions. Great yeah. band.
Yeah. No, they were, and they're one of those bands that, you know, puts effort into playing live and, you know, tries to make it, you know, especially with like, those are two of the most entertaining bass players there are to watch.
Yeah. But I mean, even like the thing is like everyone thinks of the Melvins, they think of Buzz, I would think primarily, but, for me, Dale's like one of my favorite drummers, genuinely, and has always been. So they just have it all. They've always had it all, even with the you know the revolving bass player thing.
Well, I think that also adds to it too, right? Because that's like, you know, like they can still be the Melvins, right? Like personality wise, it doesn't change. The guitar's there, and then you're right. Like Dale is top 10 rock drummers of all time, easy. Mm-hmm. But like the bass is what changes the flavor enough that it's kind of different every time you see it.
Yeah. I've only ever seen them once, but yeah, I can imagine like the lineups that they've had over the last decade were not the same as when I saw them. So yeah, very cool either way.
Yeah. They were put on a really good show. I had to leave early so I could come back here and do footnotes, but that's because
apologies, dude,
no need to apologize. I'm loyal to the footnote cause. I said to the Melvins, I interrupted the set. I walked right on stage, grabbed the microphones, and I have to leave. I got to go home and record footnotes.
I'm sure that happened. Yeah.
And they applauded me. Everyone.
Nice. In the room. Of course. Of course.
Go on. Record those footnotes, please.
I'd like you to recount a bit of your, since you haven't talked about it. And I feel like you're talking about everything to not talk about it. But how did the Subway show go?
It was really cool. Like, I guess, yeah, to fill everyone in this last week. Fucked up through Dan Burke, who hit me up to do this thing, and it was, you know, this very kind of like cool opportunity to play the unused or the disused, I should say, base station underneath the base station here in Toronto that was like built in the 60s as an overflow station for the subway that and just never really used and is really haunted. Like my producer for Much Music got attacked by a ghost down there one time.
Hmm.
It was crazy. We were filming a thing for The Wedge, my old TV show on Much Music. And one second, going to do a dab. Is it just me or is it like oil and flowers in here all of a sudden?
I think it's just you.
But anyway, we're in a closet down there. And my producer was like, no one was around them. And all of a sudden, they're like, who's grabbing me? And the psychic who was with us was like, something's in the room with us. And I'm like, no one's around you. And they're like, something's fucking grabbing me. And I'm like, no, I can see that there's nothing around you. You're by yourself. And then they started screaming and ran into the room. And like, it was fucking crazy.
That does sound crazy.
But anyway, fucked up played a set there. No ghosts. but something even scarier, John Tory, Toronto's mayor, was there.
Really?
Yeah, but he left before we played. Thank God.
I was going to say, like, wow. I thought you meant he was like, he witnessed a set. It was going to be.
No, but he and I have met before, though, because remember, I moderated the debate between him and Doug Ford and
Olivia Chow. But that's still a far cry from I'm going to watch a fucked up set.
Yeah. No, he thank God was not, I don't think. You know, he wasn't in the pit, put it that way.
So who else, was there more than one act, or were you guys the only ones that played?
Yeah, Delilah played. I'm trying to remember all the other acts that played. I unfortunately didn't get there till after kid bedtime. But I'm trying to remember who played.
Either way, like I just didn't know if it was only you guys or it was like a bunch of groups, so yeah.
No, it was a few groups played as well. Delilah, Segilia.
Yeah, that's like the noise dude or whatever on Summer Isle. Yep. Cool.
Yeah, and Tyreek or Die.
Cool.
Played, and it was like a pretty fucking weird experience to get to play down there. You know, it's like,
I just thought it was an interesting, like I even saw the lead up to that and I thought that's really, you know, like if I were in town or whatever, which I didn't happen to be, I was just thought that would be neat to see. I just didn't know how it would unfold. in terms of like where the band would play and what all that. So
right on the platform, and they used two subway cars as barricades.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like, it was a really fun experience, you know, like it was one of those shows where, you know, you're never going to get to do that again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm never going to get to play Bass Asian again. And also the other problem was they had to keep it within the realm of safety. So there was only, I think, 200 people allowed there. Mm. And there's pretty much one transit cop for every 5 people or 10 people.
Crazy.
Yeah. It was a lot of well policed, but it was a show in a fucking subway station.
That is great. It is fitting that you guys would play that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. It was definitely a cool experience and, you know, something that I will not probably be able to do again. So glad I got to do it. Thank you so much to everyone that helped put that on, because God, what a thrill. Yeah. It was Kyle from Delilah too, that, they got it too.
That, like, which, sorry?
Kyle from Delilah was like part of I think that's he was like the driving force.
Oh, okay.
They got that venue.
Gotcha.
And then cool. Dan Burke was also involved.
Gotcha. Nice.
But yeah, it was weird. Weird as shit. Weird as shit. Let's open that mailbag, Chris.
All right, mailbag. I'm going to try and bust through some of these quick just so we can get through them all. First one, real quick, is the Norwegian correspondent, Kel, wrote in. Always with great stuff. But in particular, the topic of Josh Brolin, as apparently he was on, I don't know if it's this week or last, but he was on the WTF podcast with Mark Maron. And I hadn't had time to listen to this yet. I don't know if you got a chance to preview it or not, Dame.
I listened to this section in question.
Okay, yeah. So it was at the 20 to 25 minute mark of the episode. Apparently, it doesn't really specify. It just says that on his punk past, it gets brought up. So I guess anyone that's interested, check that out. But did you have any thoughts on that immediately, Dame?
It's one of those things where, If there's ever the opportunity to interview Josh Brolin, there's a lot left to uncover. Also, Mark Maron really needs to bone up on his Nardcore knowledge.
I think, fair enough. I don't blame anyone that doesn't know a lot about Nardcore if they're not punk centric, but yes, fair enough.
But it left me with like a lot of hope that I'll get to interview that guy one day. Cause
yeah.
Man, it would be a fun one.
Nice. So thanks again, Kel. Great.
Yes. Thank you, Kel.
Great heads up. And this one's kind of hard to talk about as far as describing the message, but basically, listener Mike R wrote in and it just basically sent a whole bunch of links under the topic of, like, quote-unquote, who collects flyers that got brought up on probably last week. Mm-hmm. We talk about it a lot, but he gave my word. There seems to be 12 or 13 different URL, like blog and or whatever you want to say, Instagram accounts or whatever, that all do this. So what I think I'm going to do is just forward this to your brother, your lovely brother. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Tristan. And he can link one or all, you know, because it's too much to shout out all these. But basically, there's a whole bunch, and we'll just try and get them up there so people can check them out at their leisure if they follow the one, whatever social media platform we want to throw it up. So anyway, that was a cool one.
Awesome.
The other one here is a message from Lane. The subject is footnote 167. Just wanted to comment on a few things from the footnote 167 pertaining to Wasted Youth Pushead cover art. In an interview in MRR issue number 8, it says that Pushead is asked, and it talks about drawing the Reagan's Inn artwork for a friend in LA, not for Wasted Youth. But somehow Wasted Youth got a hold of it and used it for their album without his permission. And it's a pretty funny read. Also, nothing but love for that album. Basically, they provide, it's on the PussFan site, PussFan.com. There's actually a link to this, which again, we can Chuck up, but there's the story of that as well, which I did not know. So
I kind of remember that.
Yeah, interesting factoid. And talk about, just in hindsight, that's a bold move to just take someone's artwork and use it for an album cover.
Yeah. But that's happened a lot. Like, I'm sure that's, like, how many, like, war photographers have had their artwork ultimately used to sell, like, a Crust 7-inch?
Yeah, for sure. I just mean, though, like, you know, I would assume at the time the Posset would have had to have been of somewhat, like, notable, you know, to pull that move. It just seems, like, kind of wild. But the second part of this message, he writes in regarding DOA and basically how we were talking about people of the sort of quote-unquote first wave of American hardcore, or even earlier, I suppose, that were able to catch them and talk about how they were amazing, and yet, you know, this is not the DOA that you and I experienced, let's say, in our later years, or in their later years, pardon me. But his theory is perhaps that their age difference might have played a part. I don't know myself if – I don't know what ages they were when they were in their prime. Like, I don't know what, you know, what ages they were when Hardcore 81 came out or what have you. But he's saying that he thinks basically some of the young bands they were playing with were much younger, and therefore perhaps they were more like fully realized adults, and that's why they were a better band, because they had that foresight or whatever you want to say. Interesting. I don't know. Damien, you got any thoughts?
No, like I'm kind of like with you, I guess.
Yeah. And it just talks about, lastly, he mentions that he got a kick out of the Jesse Michaels creating a punk anecdote in that interview, and that he had a similar experience trying to recruit band members. So thank you in the past, pardon me. So thanks, Lane, for that message.
I think we all have had that. I think that's like a part of being a punk is like,
yeah,
at some point you're like, I got to make more of me. And
I think, go on. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like, the thing that I've always found interesting is like when you create a punk and then that punk becomes undone, and you're like, it's like you feel like your child has betrayed you.
My thing is that there are two hallmarks of, like, especially rural punk rock experience. One is what we're talking about here, which is the create a punk thing. And the other one for me would be like, and this is just a general punk experience overall, it's knowing someone who is like awkwardly older than you, which we've talked a lot about in past episodes.
Yeah. Hanging out with an adult friend.
Yeah.
But no, like, I think for me, it's like, I remember the day when like the kids that I had made into like punk kids all were like listening to Tragically Hip at this party. And we're like, no, we don't want to hear any of that fucking NoFX bullshit anymore.
Uh-oh.
And I was just like, what? And that's probably the root of my Tragically Hip issue for the longest time, right there. That moment.
Fair enough.
And then little did I know that years later, I would not speak to any of those kids. But I would like the Tragically Hip and probably would have more in common with them now.
True.
You know, I got over it. I got past it.
You did. another message here. This is regarding Pittsburgh, and it's okay. From the, sort of the content last week, and of course the Jesse Michaels interview. And of course it's in reference to that interview that the listener John writes in. One band he mentions that didn't get mentioned in the Pittsburgh discussion was the late great hardcore band Battered Citizens, the one and only 7-inch brackets, and their demo was reissued several years later. But they should get a shout out because, and he has 4 points. One, their 7-inch came out on Seattle's great Overkill Records.
Yep.
In 1989, he thinks. He's recently been on a quest to get the Overkill stuff. Undertow, No Escape, Intent to Injure. Actually, not sure if Intent to Injure was ever mentioned on your show, but I think they are totally underrated.
It's come up.
Yeah, not sure why they don't get more love, but I digress. So that was point one. Two, interestingly, when you look at the Battered Citizens 7-inch artwork, totally has Urban Styles vibe to it, which I know has been in a recent topic of conversation. So they were into the whole hardcore graffiti movement, even though they weren't from New York City. Three, they played with so many bands and came through the Tri-State Pittsburgh area and along the East Coast back in the day. If you do flyer research, play with Gorilla Biscuits, Warzone, NoFX, ton of others, so they represented Pittsburgh hardcore for a bit, certainly along with Half-Life, etc. And point four, a couple of the members still play in some cool hardcore bands today, Killer of Sheep and Cultivator, and they're keeping the spirit alive, as it were. And that was a message from John. So,
I think that 7-inch is super cool. I love that single. Never got to see him live. Don't know if it's better than that first Half-Life 7-inch from my personal taste, but I do like that 7-inch. Intent to Injure, one of the best late 80s bands, 90s hardcore bands ever.
Yep, great name too.
Yeah, like that's, and also the cool thing about that Overkill record, they did a color vinyl pressing on that single. Yeah. It was a blue vinyl version.
Of course you know that, yeah.
Love that single. Also, they, like, you know, Intent to Injure, Overkill Records, amazing. Nemesis Records, amazing. Striving for Togetherness Records, amazing.
Yeah. That's those are three biggies right there.
That's it. That's all
three
you need.
Three little biggies is what I should say, but yeah.
Yeah.
Three footnotes biggies.
That's it. Like, that's three major labels.
Yes. We have another message here from friend of the show and past guest of the show, Chris Minicucci. And he writes in with the Poison Idea footnotes, and it's basically the list of records from the Record Collectors Are Pretentious Assholes, the cover. And we did that whole trying to figure out exactly all the records, and we did the values of them, et cetera, of that, or at least according to what list we found from a listener. Mm-hmm. And he says him and puts Westbrook, who I assume is John Westbrook, right, is his first name, from Knife Fight?
Yep.
Yeah, that they compiled a list a while back. And to double down on how thorough this is, there's an attached photo, which is not even the record cover itself, like meaning the actual record scan. It's the actual original photo that was used to for the artwork of the actual record. As you know, Damien can attest, I've never seen it. I think I've seen photos, but Chris has an insane, probably the craziest Poison
Idea. I would say there's no question, like the number one Poison Idea collection. Yeah.
So they compiled a list from this, and the list is on here. This is difficult to break down too, because some of this is like the list that we found already. But anyway, he has it here. I don't feel like I need to read all this.
No.
But we'll try and figure out a way. I want to do something with this where we can put it up in some capacity. So I'll try and figure that out with your brother. But I feel like this list, despite us having the URLs in the previous episodes where we, you know, talk a bit about it and the values and whatever, I do think this would probably be the best list as far as the most dependable, knowing the people that made it. Not throwing any shade at anybody else that tried or whatever, but the level.
Well, this is like the hardcore detectives. Like, there was a point in history where, you know, I don't know if Westbrook still, you know, kept up as much as he now, because I haven't seen him in a while. But I know Cooch definitely has, obviously illustrated by his current label. But there was a moment where those guys were like, I don't know, just like on opposite ends of the country, but just like doing deep digs to find like unheard of recordings. And like, they turned up some crazy stuff. Like, they are responsible for finding some ridiculous stuff out there.
Agreed. Speaking of which, so you mentioned the label you're speaking of is Radio Raheem Records, and of course Painkiller of the association, but Radio Raheem just put out three new things. Just a quick shout out, Against, Welcome to the Aftermath LP, Acid Attack, Suburbia's Dream LP, and Hellbent 83-84 Demos LP. And so if you're into this kind of deep head archivist hardcore punk or metal, if it were, or crossover, get into it. There you go. But great messages. And yeah.
Awesome. I've decided to click on the Striving for Togetherness record discogs, Chris.
Yep.
And just randomly, I was like looking through this. This is, I believe, Kevin Gill's label too, right? So he's going to come on the show eventually, so we can go over this in much greater detail at that point. But just can you click on choose X R Life 7 inch?
Yeah, I'm. you've had me pivot here. I was in another thing, so I'm just pulling it up now. Sorry, what did you want me to look at here?
Choose X R Life.
Choose X R Life. I'm not seeing this. It's what like year?
Striving for Togetherness Records.
No, I know, I got that. But what year? What catalog?
It's like
what
1993. Striving for Togetherness.
Oh, Choose X R Life. Sorry, I was looking at that. Was a comp group. Choose X. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our Life. Yep.
Read the Matrix for the A side.
Wow.
Wimps and posers leave to stage.
Oh, it's funny. I didn't realize the spelling, the grammatical error there, but that's amazing.
It's awesome.
B side. Haha. Isn't that funny? Okay.
That's my favorite Matrix I've ever found. Anyway, sorry, Chris. I got distracted by that. But
no worries. Classic cover to that. Choose X, Our Life, too.
And Intent to Injure is on that label, so there you go.
Great. Well, this label. One, I'm going to steer you back on course here, and you're
yes,
going to love
me
this.
Back. Get me back.
It's a Punk Wrestling Connection email.
All right.
My favorite. It says this listener, Nicholas, writes in, says there's another person that he wants to add to the list. Eric, and I'm probably battering the name here, I apologize, but it's Eric Pleakin, P-L-E-K-I-N. Anyway, better known as Biddy, is a longtime Wisconsin hardcore veteran, currently plays in Deathwish, who are a great Motorhead Discharge hybrid style band, has a couple LPs on Beer City. He's been in a ton of bands, including Remission, Wartorn, Dresden, Default, ton more. He used to wrestle under the name of quote-unquote Straight Edge, Eric Hammers. In the late 90s, he co-founded ACW All-Star Championship Wrestling in the Green Bay area. And he's a super nice dude, says, and basically is giving you even more ammunition for your punk wrestling connection, Damien. There you go.
Chris, it never ends with that one, I'm afraid. Like, it really is the gift that keeps on giving. Thank you for that email. And that's just one more check in my box, you know.
So we have a few more I'm going to go through real quick. One is there's part of this email. So it was in regards to the ICP face paint, Insane Clown Posse, that is, face paint origins, which Damien had previously wondered if it had anything to do with the human furnace.
Yeah.
Which was sort of a little bit of a stretch, I think. But anyway, we touched a bit on this before. I can't remember what came about. But there is a tidbit here, he writes. This is Austin who writes in, by the way. It says, read in a biography, face paint was inspired by Detroit rapper Esham, which we already talked about, I believe, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have a small, this is the part I wanted to get to. They did have a small punk connection, though, in a sense. Steve Jones, this is alleged in this email. We got to look this up in the resource in a second. But Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, apparently, played guitar on the song Piggy Pie off of 1997's ICP's 1997 album, The Great Malenko. And although neither of them, it's a quote unquote here, although neither of the clowns were present, he recorded his parts separate to them. Basically, they didn't have any real knowledge or whatever of them. And so we need to look that up now.
It is true. I'm looking at it right now.
Wow.
Yep.
So that's pretty incredible.
I think Great Malenko's a wrestling reference as well.
That I have no idea, but I'm just amazed that of all the times that this has been sort of broached in footnotes and anything, that I had no clue and there was no mention of this specific item, that Steve Jones is on that record, has an appearance on that record.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very, you know, maybe there is, so does Alice Cooper on that record too.
That's wild.
And Slash.
I'm just thinking, like, maybe it's not. You think he actually played, or you think it's just a sample that they had to credit that way?
Well, he probably played.
I'm just, you know,
it's a feature, right? Like how it's presented here.
Yeah. Anyway, wild. So there's a little bit of new info regarding that whole strange scenario.
And once again, Chris, we can all agree that Homies is a sick song.
No, we can definitely not agree on that, but you feel that way, sure.
We can all agree.
We have another friend of the show, Billy Hamilton, writes in regarding the
former guest.
Former guest, pardon me, I should have said that as well. But basically, the evidence is piling up to support hockey. He's trying to chime in that he's trying to make hockey a little bit more prominent in this most punk adjacent sport category. And he does mention the Ben Scrivens Alexis on Fire thing, which we've mentioned in the past. It's like Ben Scrivens' goalie has the logo on his helmet. And this one is a handful of fans had hit him up. He plays in the band Silverstein, for those who don't know. That I believe this goalie's name, I'm going to probably butcher this as well, but Maxim, I'm going to say Legace, maybe it's Legacy, I don't know. But it's fourth or fifth string goalie for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. And he does, in fact, also have, I don't know if this is actually painted on or sticker or what have you, but yeah.
It looks like it's painted on.
Yeah, it probably is. Usually they are. But yeah, it's the Silverstein logo or what have you. And so, yeah. Basically, Ben's here that Max via Twitter ended up scoring tickets to, ended up scoring tickets to the first win against the Ottawa Senators late November, coincided with the gig in the nation's capital. And shout out to Sean Scallon, he writes as well, who is, of course, infamous Ottawa. How do you describe Sean Scallon?
Like hardcore legend.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there we go. And so there's another one for hockey. And the last email here, real quick. Listener Eric L writes in that he just watched Ready Player One and saw several punk things in it. One scene, the main character is deciding what his avatar will wear. And he flashes into a punk with Liberty spikes. His leather jacket has a big DK logo on the back. Dead Kennedys, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the main female character is wearing a Joy Division Unknown Pleasures shirt for most of her real world portion of the movie. I know nothing about this movie myself, but interesting. Damien, your thoughts?
Yeah, like I think... You know, I'd say Dead Kennedys obviously, you know, like not obviously the deepest cut reference, but like a deeper cut reference. But at this point, that Joy Division shirt, like I saw that in H&M the other day. Not that I was, I wasn't buying anything for myself there, but I was in that store wandering around and saw this Joy Division shirt. And I was like, wow, they're like classic rock now.
Yeah, I think that, that one lends itself in a weird way because the motif is so like, you know, whatever. It's like very artsy, that graph or whatever it is you want to say. So it's, yeah. But either way, very interesting that's bleeding in because what is that like some major movie that just came out? I don't know anything.
Yeah, it's like Steven Spielberg. It's based on a book about a video game world.
Okay.
Where it's like in the future and then people go into this video game world that's like kind of like Second Life. But like you can do whatever you want there and it's like virtual reality. It's kind of like probably what the real future is going to be like.
Well, either way, that was the end of mailbag and, thank you all for writing.
Chris, I want you to know, and I want listeners to know that there is a vinyl 12-inch version of Insane Clown Posse's Homies.
Yeah.
And if someone wants to buy it for Chris and I, that would be a much appreciated gift to turn out a punk because we can all agree that it is one of the best songs ever.
Again, I don't agree.
It's getting more extreme, Chris, until you agree with me.
If somehow we create a Turn Out a Punk footnote shrine, which if you want to include that, and of course has to include Baby Gopal on Pink.
Yes, yes, definitely.
A bunch of other things. I'm with you on, I really want to take this joke to the nth degree, to the point where should we ever tour again, that people actually bring these things to us would be amazing.
That's a dream. That's how you know you made it.
Yeah.
When people bring you Homies on vinyl.
Yeah.
Because it's rare. There's only 400 copies according to Discogs. One for $50 here. Like, I'm kind of tempted. And I would ask for like my birthday or Christmas from Lauren, but I don't think she'd buy me an Insane Clown Posse record.
I don't even know what to say to that, but yeah.
And I also can't bring myself to spend $50 on an Insane Clown Posse record, even though it's homies.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that. Do you want to get into the episode?
Well, let's get into the episode because I could talk about this track all night. Yeah, like this is a I don't know, Chris, we were talking off air about Slow a little bit before, and I it's kind of surprised me you weren't familiar with that song Have Not Been the Same, because I thought, you know, for me it was just like such a staple of CFNY and of much music at that time, or a little bit later, even when I was kind of more aware of much music. But you were unfamiliar with this band prior to the interview with Tom, right?
I was, yeah. I have a blind spot on this. I don't know why, because everything about it screams like it should have been something that was I was familiar with. Because as Damon and I have talked probably ad nausea about, there's a certain era of like Canadian CanCon radio or video play from our formative years that just sort of, you know, I can't shake. Like probably a week or two ago, Boot Sauce was mentioned, and that made me chuckle. And so yes, even that's something, you know what I mean? Like these groups that really no one hardly knows or remembers. And I tend to be sort of up on that kind of stuff. This was one that didn't, and it sucks. I didn't know it either, because it's quite good.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, of all the things, that this did not hit me in any way. The video does look vaguely familiar, but I didn't really recall the song, especially in the interview when you were talking about it. Then I went and listened to it. I didn't recall it, but it's cool.
Oh, it's a great song.
Yeah, so it's a neat band. I think, anyway, I don't know where you want to begin with this, but yeah, I was not familiar up until revisiting it just now.
Well, it's funny because I was talking tonight with Buzz and from the Melvins, and I'm like, oh yes, the guy from Slow on my podcast. He's like, that was a fucking incredible band. He's like, they were so good. They play Seattle all the time, and I'd always go see them, and they were just like on another level. Like, that were like a great band. And it's kind of like, I was going to say, you, Chris, one of the things I wanted to do today, and this might be early into the discussion to do this, but why don't we just get it out of the way?
Sure.
What would you say your top five Canadian songs are? Maybe we'll say top 10.
Jesus, songs, not
yeah,
records.
But like, I'm gonna like, and this isn't like, you know, like I like, because obviously we could just go and, you know, probably just name 10 songs by Scare Tactic, and that would be the songs, or 10 Ruination songs.
Yeah,
and those would be the songs. But I'm saying, like,
no, Ruination doesn't count. It doesn't fall under Maple.
So. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It doesn't have enough.
Yeah.
At various times, though, it was half and half.
The whole true. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to do it right now. I'm typing it to see if I can pull up 10. You're talking punk centric or just in general?
Well, like, I don't know. Like, Have Not Been the Same by them, by Slow, is definitely on mine. Picture My Face by Teenage Head.
That is a good one. Yeah.
Would be on mine. Sloan, The Other Man would probably be on mine. It's like hard to pick a Sloan song, right? Like,
well, there's a bunch. That is a very good one. That's a very good late, well, I guess not late anymore. I guess mid-period era.
Mid-period, I guess, yeah.
Record, but or song, rather. But I would just pick, you know, you got to pick, for me, if you're talking about Sloan, I don't know, I'll just pick, like,
Coax Me.
Coax Me is also excellent. And I wasn't even where I was going to go. I was just going to go with Underwhelmed, because that was, like, the, and still is, arguably, like, a big radio.
It's a good song, but, like, I don't think it, like, betrays how, like, the melodic genius of that band, right?
It's true, yeah. I'm trying to think of others.
I would then have Teenland by Northern Pikes.
Okay, yeah.
I think that song's fucking incredible. I'm trying to think of some, what would be some other ones?
Well, one I'm going to call that I can't believe you haven't named already, but it's sort of an obvious to the show anyway, which is Scream Fist by the Vile Tones.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was trying to stay away from like the more,
yeah,
more like punk stuff, but you're right. Like, that would have to be on it. And then, Out of Luck by Pointed Sticks, maybe. Barbara by Modernettes would definitely be on there.
Yeah, those groups, like, it's funny in the discussion, in the interview, you guys talk about that, those records being amazing. And yeah, there's, I mean, boy, oh boy. Like, I don't, Pointed Sticks, yeah, I don't know.
Subhumans, Behind the Smile would be also on mine, but I don't expect it to be on anyone else's.
It's just, all that stuff's so good. You can pick a Young Canadian song, you could pick, yeah. Canada's tough, I mean... I don't know.
But I would definitely say for me, though, Have Not Been the Same would make my list.
This is where you're going with this.
Yes. That's where I'm going with it for me.
I dig it. It's cool. I would have to, like, really kind of, again, as someone who's just recently familiar, I can hardly go, yes, that is one of mine. But it's a hell of a good song.
Kids in the Hall theme. What's that song called? By
Shadowy Man. Yeah, I don't know what the song's actually called. I've never known.
That's on my list, too.
Great song it is. That's very, yeah, that's killer. I'm trying to think of other great Canadians.
Locked in a Trunk of a Car by Tragically Hip.
I don't even know if I know that song, at least by title.
That song is good. That song is, goddamn, that song is killer.
I'm trying to think of Canadian songs now. I feel like we're really missing some, it's got to be a Doughboy song in there probably. Trying to think of who else. Anyway, it's a good topic. I can't do it off the top of my head. I would have to take some time. But if we really want to do this, I'll try and work on
it. Okay. Well, another time we will come back to this.
But yeah, it's hard. I don't know off the top of my head because it's – I would say something and I go, well, that other song's probably better than this. I should revisit that or whatever. But anyway, the ones we've named thus far are quite good and would definitely be on the list. As far as overall tops. But where did you want to begin with the talking points other than what we just said?
I guess that's it. Let's dive on into the first point. That was kind of the first point, I guess. So why don't you take the next one?
Okay. Well, I'm trying to think of where to go. One, I didn't bizarrely know anything about the Squamish Five. And so immediately upon that being touched on, I was right into it and started looking up and it blew my mind. I knew nothing about that and I don't know why, but you said you were something in school came up with that for you.
Yeah. Like we learned about that in school.
Wow.
Like it was,
I definitely did not. That's insane.
It's one of the few kind of real exciting moments in Canadian history that stands out to me. Maybe it was in university that I learned it, but I definitely remember learning in a classroom setting.
Yeah. That's phenomenal. But I had no idea about the Subhumans connection to that or whatever, that one member. It's just wild. I knew nothing of that. So to like, that was interesting to find out about. And, if no one knows, feel free to Google it and, look into it. It's a very interesting tidbit in history. I would dare I say the Canadian Weather Underground or something of that nature is
pretty very, much, very similar.
But I'm trying to think of first talking point. I thought of something very funny, just as a sidebar, because you guys both were speaking upon like the idea of grunge or pre-grunge in regards to like that East Van Halen group that I'm not familiar with. But
I'd never heard of them either. That was totally news to me. And I don't think there's recordings.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do weirdly though think they've come up before because that name does sound like obviously Van Halen. I get that reference, but like East Van Halen, I'm pretty sure some West Coast person you've had on.
It would have to be.
Did mention it.
It would have to be McBean.
Yeah, it might have been, but I'm even thinking like. Anyway, whatever. I do believe it's come up and it just never got dissected, but. And again, I don't know anything about the band, but what I was thinking about was you were talking about like metal, like kind of the sort of he's speaking about punk sort of in the years sort of when it fades away a bit and it becomes whatever he felt slow was associated with.
Yeah.
This is my hot take of the week, which is grunge not just slacker metal?
Yeah, like I think that was the thing, right? Like there's that story, that club that I think has even come up here on the Patty episode where it was like half punk and then on the other side it was the metal side. And that's like totally, it's probably just like, it's probably like rock kids, you know, convincing punk kids to join their bands.
Yeah. Anyway, it just was the thought I had when I was like, you know, that's maybe how I would describe it, is like, imagine a metal band, like a slacker metal band that isn't quite a metal band, that's grunge. But yeah, East Van Halen I know nothing about. What is, okay, so No Exit was another one you touched on, but I didn't know. So there's,
dude, look at that LP.
But is there, if I'm not mistaken, there's a contemporary group called that? I think so, right?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe there is. Like
I know that's not the group you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about this is like, I think this is on the cover, if I remember correctly, of Smash the State. And it is one of the rarest Canadian records.
And that's the one he says, as a record, isn't very good, but they were an incredible band for a minute or
whatever. Yeah, yeah. He said they got really good when they had members of East Van Halen in them.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's funny that this is the one document of that scene that he's describing.
That No Exit record, or the, what are you speaking of?
That No Exit record.
I can't find it.
It's No Exit number 4 is what it comes up under.
Oh, the good old resource.
Yep.
Did they really just do a Clash thing?
They did like a Clash parody on one side and a Damn parody on the other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yep, LP, 1980, not on a label, as is the Canadian way of that era. Oh, it's actually someone's YouTube, but thank goodness. Wow, yeah, this is mega expensive.
Yep.
Holy. Nice. Anyway, I didn't know this record, but I didn't, yeah, very, like, so obviously I'm assuming you don't have it. This is your major Canadian want.
This is one of my big wants.
Okay, so listeners who've been paying deep attention, yeah. I'm going to reference something right now, which will explain. I don't even have to tell you what the record's worth. You just judge. Have, 19, want, 103. That's way less than half, of course.
Yep.
So you can guess that it's going to be a problem. That's my theory there, whatever.
It's an expensive-ass record.
Yep.
There's a copy in Toronto, though, so I could probably just go and pick it up.
But yeah, anyway, this LP looks cool. I don't know. It's a strange, you're right, the damned spoof is funnier than the Clash one to me.
Yeah, yeah. They're a cool band. Like, they're definitely one of those bands that there's just like that vibe of that record is just so cool that, you know, that's why it's been on my list for so long.
That's nuts.
But it is not mine, and it will not be mine for...
Oh, it's weird too, because it's actually a studio side A and then a live side B.
Yeah.
Wow. That's an interesting move. Anyway. The other thing that I got a kick out of, he mentions it in the interview as well. I don't know if he talked about this, but in another context where he's talking about Smiling Buddha, which there is right now a Smiling Buddha in Toronto, which of course I don't believe has any reference to the Vancouver one.
No, that's like a legendary one in Vancouver. Yeah,
exactly.
Many a flyer.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with this No Exit thing. I think I was just curious myself because I didn't know it. What do you got?
Well, I think one of the things that I kind of found interesting was his take, which was completely contradictory to mine. But I would love to find out from you, Chris, what you think about this. But the idea that punk lost the plot when it became about anyone being able to do it.
I love the take. I'm in between you two, I would say. I think you framed it to me slightly different than I felt the interview suggests. Not to say that you didn't, you know, you were saying something poorly. It just, I knew what he meant. I don't know if I fully, again, I'm not on that side entirely, but I know what I thought was interesting is he was saying that essentially what he didn't identify with was the idea of community, broadly speaking. And as someone who seemingly, you know, had difficulties with people, as he kind of mentions in the interview, that was the part of it he didn't like, and that's, you know, therefore what lost the plot or what have you. I thought that was an interesting take from, like, a curmudgeon standpoint, not to say that, you know, like, you know, quote, like, to not that this is what he was saying or that anyone's saying, but just to paraphrase to illustrate my point, but like that DIY is bad or something. I don't think that's what was intended in what he's saying. I just think he was saying that the emphasis became on, you know, the communal aspect rather than, I don't know what you would say, like that differentiation between the audience and artist, which, you know, you, like the Ramones anecdote, which he uses, is an interesting one because he's not wrong in kind of saying that that's special. But at the same time, for me, you know, I don't know, I could name, you know, however many hardcore punk bands as an example would have not been that way and been equally as, you know, whatever, interesting or as inspiring. So I think it's just, depends on the perspective of what you came from. But, you know, no, I'm in the middle. I don't know. I'm in the middle on that one. I'm not fully on your side. I'm not fully on his side. I'm in the middle on that one.
It's weird because, like, the Melvins, right, like, seeing them tonight, I had this fresh in my mind, and, like, they're a band that presents themselves differently, right? Like, they put on different clothes when they go on stage.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's a performance, you know? And, like, I find that's awesome, you know, and there's a place for that, you know? But at the same time, I don't know, like, I think, to me, the idea that anyone can do this, like, that's where this is so different from every other type of music, save maybe modern rap music, which kind of espouses the same sort of philosophy these days, you know, at least to me, from what I'm kind of seeing that.
Well, yeah. Well, it's hard to be on, you know, it's hard to be the person who's not on your side on this one, because I'm not saying I'm not, but I just mean anybody, because in reality, if no one had attempted to do, you know, anything because they were inspired by whatever in this genre, broadly termed, then of course we wouldn't have like a ton of great stuff. And that, of course, is to a detriment. I think the only thing I would push back slightly on is the idea that, you know, and I think this is kind of what he was trying to say, which is essentially that this is how I understood it. When you're focusing on the community aspect of it more than, you know, so to speak, the output, if you will, like the actual execution, then that is, you know, to him was not good. I'm not entirely with that, but I see what someone's saying, because you can see a lot of bands whose intentions are themselves are great, you know, as people or as community people even, but perhaps have not been, you know, sonically have not done the greatest things, if you will. Anyway.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that argument. But at the same time, like, even out of those types of community-based punk things, awesome music comes out.
I agree. I mean, we could even, there's a lot of great groups we could, like, use as trumps to that argument and say, well, what about this? You know, and it's correct. The only thing I found interesting was I just thought his take from a personal standpoint, I understood
it. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like, once again, like it was saying earlier on in the show, like whatever your definition of punk is, you know, it's going to be different than probably the person right beside you. But like, that's what makes this kind of interesting, because it is kind of like just like a crowdsourced rule book that we're all playing out of.
I agree with that. I also, though, think that, like, hearing him speak upon this, like, in hindsight is interesting, because if I look at when I looked at that, the video for, whatchamacallit, Slow Have Not Been the Same, the vibe of that group is way different than I expected. I expected it to be way more, you know, like, whatever, have that, you know, that rocks, almost like, dare I say, like rock star ism to it.
Yeah.
It's blatantly not, you know, of that. And I didn't get that at all. If anything, I thought it was way more, you know, like punk in attitude and vibe than I had anticipated. I thought it was going to be like, if I'm to use another Canadian, well, we're on Canadian content, tease a group, say, like, let's say the Headstones. So for listeners that know or don't, then you won't get this. But Damien.
You probably, even if you don't know the Headstones musically, you definitely know Hugh Dillon because.
Yeah, so Hardcore Logo. Of course. Yeah.
But what's that other show, Flashpoint? That's why he's famous in America now.
He's on Flashpoint. He's on. He's been on a few. He's an actor, I think, primarily now. But my point is, something like the Headstones is kind of like what I expected out of the kind of the way he framed Slow in those years. And again, this is neither good nor bad. I've never been a Headstones fan myself, but Headstones definitely had that, like, you know, quote unquote, like rock star. Ism to it. They weren't a gigantic group. They were fairly big in Canada, but like it was like you knew they kind of knew punk stuff or came from it or however you want to frame that. But as the group, they were not, you know, what I would consider to be, you know, your atypical punk group that was sort of you know, I don't know what you want to say, like accessible or you know, it was rock starry more than it was, you know. Well, to me, cool, but it just like, I don't know how I'm not articulating this right, but what I'm trying to say is Slow did not give that to me at all. Looking back on it, I think it's actually reminds me of like aesthetically of like weirdly, like aesthetically, it reminds me of like Pussy Galore or something. It's very, very like antagonistic, but not rock starry. So I don't know. I just think it's cool. So I think his recollection, mind you, he was there, not me, but I don't think I think it was more right on. Like, I think it was more right on. I think it was more punk in attitude in the right way. I don't think there was that whatever differentiation. But maybe again,
maybe they were just like too cool for Canada.
Yeah, it could be.
You know, at the time, especially, right? Like, they're just like just seem like they would have been just too like in your face for kind of the vibe.
I mean, yeah, I'm just astounded at how kind of right on everything is. If you look at their band photo,
yeah,
there's a black and white band photo. And it's sick.
Dude, those records are awesome.
Yeah, I got to get these. I also like that. So Zulu, again, so this should be maybe the next talking point here. So, of course, Quintessence, which I wasn't aware was a store. I've only ever known of it as a label, but of course I'm not from out west. But so Zulu, who put out the Slow records...
Which is also a store now.
It was also the store. Well, I knew the store Zulu, but I didn't know of it as a label. But Zulu, is he still even there?
I think it's still there.
Because I thought last I'd heard it wasn't. I might be, again, I'm probably incorrect in that. But anyway,
see what the website says.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it still has hours up.
Okay, so it's still going. Cool. Either way, it's cool that they put it. So it's funny that two records or two, well, not two, but like the Quintessence and Zulu thing are both tied to like putting out records of this era. And I'm just, sadly, what is the Toronto equivalent of that? Is there one?
No,
there wasn't. Yeah.
No, there wasn't. Unfortunately, like if you look like all the bands, I think one of the problems is, you know, and I don't know if I've even talked about this on the podcast, but I've definitely talked about it with people, you know, and they're probably you, Chris, actually, when I think about it. Toronto's too close to the music industry.
Yeah, right? Okay. I've heard that, yeah.
That's why I don't think we ever had, like, we did have some cool hardcore bands, but, like, a lot of people that probably would have wound up playing hardcore, you know, wound up playing in rock bands or wound up playing in... metal bands, because it was just like that probably was more of a commercially viable path, or not even like to huge success or anything, but just like then playing hardcore would have been.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think that's a fair observation. I you have brought it up in the past, I think on the show, but I just mean it's funny that there are two instances of to record store then labels or vice versa, however you want to consider them, that documented, you know, aspects, certainly Quintessence of major importance.
Well, Fringe, right? Like that would be,
I guess Fringe. Yeah. Like, but
Fringe, Record Peddler and Fringe.
Yeah. Did they not though? Well, Fringe, there was some like genuine Toronto stuff, but wasn't a lot of the Fringe stuff licensed like international?
A lot of it was licensed international stuff, but like, they did do, you know, Diabolik Force, which is, of course, Brian Taylor's imprint that he had a couple releases on.
Yeah.
And they also did Youth Records, once again, Brian Taylor's band. I'm trying to think of other stuff they did. Bunch of fucking goofs later on.
I never knew where they were from, but was Slaughter from Toronto or no?
Scarborough, I believe.
Okay, whatever. So GTA. So yeah. they did do that, did they not?
That's Diabolik Force. That was Brian's thing.
Oh, so he did put it out. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the other. Sacrifice was the other one, but I can't remember where they were from.
Sacrifice, I believe, is also GTA.
Yeah. Well, either way. So they're just, you know, Quintessence is, you know, comparatively is an insane example because you look at the records they put out and it's kind of nuts. It's just too bad there's no equivalent on the other side of the country that I haven't, as far as I know.
Well, because like Teenage Head signed to a major label.
Yeah.
Vile Tones Management put out their single, the first one.
Yeah.
There wasn't like any labels. Like I'm trying to think of labels that did like more than one release even. Showtime Records that did the Hi-Fis and the Bobcat singles. But like Montrose, just the Vile Tones. I'm trying to think of stuff that, yeah, there's like, it doesn't really happen in Toronto till what, Deranged? Ugly Pop?
Yeah, probably. I can't think of things.
Raw Energy?
Oh, there you go. Yep.
But yeah, you're right. There's not labels that really capture scenes in sort of any real way. Well, the metal scene captured by Diabolik Force in Enigma. Or is it Enigma? But whatever that other metal label is. But they did a pretty good job of... What is it? Let me look it up on the Mal Havoc tape. One sec.
Epidemic.
Right? Epidemic, that's it.
Yeah.
I can't read it. Yeah. I don't have my glasses on.
Yeah.
Put them on. That Mal Havoc tape is stuck now. Okay. But yeah, they did a pretty good job about capturing those scenes.
Yeah, that's fair. I just, it's whenever I see stuff like this where it's, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I really like when things are documented in this way. And geographically, I think it works.
Well, that's why I think Vancouver is like, that city punches way above its weight when it comes to music.
Yeah, like, well, I think you guys nail it in the sort of in discussing it. I can't disagree. I think some of the, especially the on record, like some of those records are excellent.
Yeah, and he's really dismissive of like the Enigmas and Brilliant Orange and like his own band even. But like, you know, and obviously like that first wave of stuff is fucking ridiculous, but like this second wave stuff is pretty awesome too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know as much about that stuff personally, but you know, those, like, the things you discuss are insane. It's just, yeah, it's nuts. It's like, you are correct, like, of this era, it's kind of wild that, you know, the amount of that gets put out and the fact that, you know, it doesn't get discussed, in my opinion anyway, on the level of, you know, well, what he says is New York and LA. I don't think it even gets discussed on a level of, I think it's way below any other. There's a lot of other cities that get talked about. Often major U.S. cities for good reason. It's not to say there's not great music, but you know, I don't know. I look at this run of Quintessence stuff, and it's very, very strong. And I don't know why. Well, I don't know. This is us being like the underdog Canadian thing or something. I don't know if I'm going to go there, but yeah, I just don't get why there isn't more about it. That's all.
Yeah, like there's, I think it's just one of those things where it's, you know, like we don't have a very good history in Canada of, you know, recording music history.
Yeah.
Underground especially. But like you go through the underground history of Canada, of music in Canada, there's like so many fucking awesome stories and so many incredibly important bands globally. That do get celebrated in other places in a greater way than I find they get celebrated here. Like Blasphemy is like, you know, internationally a top tier band, but like here it's just like kind of like a footnote of a footnote. Like that's a band that like, you know, obviously it'd be fucking ridiculous for the Junos to honor them, but would it be? Yeah. You know, or slaughter or sacrifice, you know, like how about honoring something kind of cool for once?
Yeah, this is, but even I think like, even the group we're discussing, like the person you interviewed, I think Slow is an interesting one to, I think it's interesting they're back.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what that would be like live now.
We missed it in Toronto. They played last week, and unfortunately, I was dealing with some stuff around with my mom's stuff. I couldn't make it out to the show, unfortunately. But it was a, apparently they're like an amazing band, like a live band that's still like a great live band.
But yeah, you know, like how many groups like this are there in our, you know, in our whatever recent history, so to speak?
I like it. Yeah, it's hard to picture about a band that like had this kind of impact, because they definitely had an impact, right? Like, but with so few releases.
Yeah, it is wild. Like, and the resource when you look it up, I didn't expect. I thought it'd be a bunch. It's like really only basically an EP and a 7-inch.
Yeah, and then there's like a couple comps. Oh, whoa, they're on an Undergrowth Records comp. I should have looked this up. Oh, that's like their first appearance on this Undergrowth record comp. Whoa, look at this lineup of fucking this comp, Chris.
Yeah, I just pulled it up. No Means No, first two.
Dude, Skinny Puppies on this.
Oh, yeah, because I'm looking at... Oh, more than one tape, yes.
Oh, there's the Sudden Impact he was talking about. No, this is the Toronto Sudden Impact that's on the tape.
Huh. That's wild.
Death Sentence?
Yeah. It's wild. Like, this came out in 84. Wow. Cassette comp from 84. It's surprisingly not that pricey.
How much, do they have copies for sale?
No, not presently.
No, yeah. No, I think that probably is like one person put one up. And then was like, oh, I'm an idiot. Sold in seconds.
But anyway, yeah. Wild comp, I don't know anything about, but that is funny. Skinny Puppy on it. Is.
Oh, I thought they were on that Christmas. Oh, they are on that Christmas Lexi. I still need to get that.
Slow is?
Yeah.
Christmas Flex.
Oh, it's only $19.
Well, there you go.
Man. I hate buying Flexies, though.
Especially ones used. You never know how badly they're going to be worked in.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to kind of put down a lot of money on. Though, I have been ridiculous in the past about buying Flexies for a lot of money, so no position to judge anyone that does.
Precedent has been set.
Yeah. Precedent has been set. Ridiculous precedent has been set.
Where else do you want to go with the talking points?
I guess we could talk about Vancouver as the third scene, and what are the best punk scenes? Like, we're going to talk about first wave. We're not going to get into hardcore, because I think hardcore is a much more complicated kind of conversation. Whereas, like, you know, first wave kind of punk, you can judge just on the strength of kind of, like, catchy songwriting.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know what the top saves would be. I mean...
Well, obviously New York and L.A., right? You got all those Danger House singles.
Sure.
You know, but, like...
Would you not put Good Vibrations in that category, too, though?
Yeah, you're right. So you have to say...
Or whatever, no, like, I don't know what eras of No Future, like, try to think of, like, Stiff, or like,
I don't think, like, Stiff, obviously, but like London, you would say London.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's, like, just, like, the Damn, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, like, all that kind of stuff. But, like, but then I'm thinking, like, population-wise, right? Like, London is a fucking massive city. New York is massive. L.A. is massive. Vancouver's not that big.
Yeah, and especially then, as opposed to now, yeah.
Yeah.
Not that it's huge now, but, you know, it pales in comparison, for sure.
Yeah. Like, I would also say Seattle. Like, that would, like, you know, like, that all those No 3 singles are awesome.
Well, I think what I believe, I don't know, maybe I'm mistaken this, but I think Vancouver is sort of, you know, obviously it's separate, but, you know, if you take the Pacific Northwest in general and Vancouver, I mean, Seattle, of course, you have the grunge thing historically or whatever, but I think, like, the Pacific Northwest and Vancouver in general are kind of, what's the word, are not given as much attention as the other things you're mentioning. Yeah. Like, it's something to that geographical part of the world. I mean, again, grunge aside, in the sense of, like, you know, obviously everyone, or whatever, not everyone, but industry went nuts about Seattle in, like, whatever, the early to mid-90s. But if you look at the what you're discussing, I think that area of the world does not get, like, even in the Jerry A episode, he's talking about the Wipers being, you know, a fairly underappreciated group.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's just precedent of this time and again, I think, in these areas, for whatever reason.
Well, when you hear D7 by the Wipers, and you're like, man, like, you know, and then it's like, the you know, there's straight up stories about the Melvins bringing them to see, you know, like Dale bringing Kirk to see the Wipers play live, you know, and like, you know, that's a template for what Nirvana sounds like right there. So, like, clearly the Wipers have had a massive influence, even just through that one band.
Well, and I think now you see it, but I still think, like, you know, are people talking about, you know, people don't talk about Portland to me, like, in terms of, like, what you're discussing against, like, Danger House or something. It's kind of a difficult one because Danger House is, you know, perfection. It's hard to really, like, mess
with. Well, I don't know, like, would you, I'm saying song for song, let's call up the Quintessence Discogs.
Yeah.
And put it against the
Danger House
Discogs.
Okay.
Nope, I don't have it yet. Do you have it?
Yeah, I have both. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's start going through it. What's each one's number one?
I don't think it has this organized correct, because I don't think
you can do. Well, let's just do it by year.
The Black Randy isn't the first release they did, is it?
I think it might
Trouble at the Cup. I don't think that's the first one, is it? Might be.
I think it is. Maybe.
Okay. Well, if it has it in the correct order, okay. I don't know that too well, but
it's a cool single. You know, it might be better than that AVEP. thing, which is admittedly not my favorite record that label put out.
That DOA 7-inch, though, where does that rack up?
That record's fucking amazing. The Prisoner?
Yeah, but it's
the
not.
The Prisoner!
Is it, you know, but is it better than that Avengers? Is it better than the Dills? Is it better than
the Pegs? Like, Dills right now especially is a hard one to talk about because, you know, like, the recent passing, of course.
Yeah.
You know, how do I get the correct order of this Danger House thing?
I think it's just if you do by year. I just thought it didn't seem like that was the first one, but I might have been wrong.
Yeah, okay. You know, like, I don't know. That DOA record's pretty amazing. That Subhumans record's fucking incredible. The Point of Sticks record's, like, those are really catchy songs. That Modern X record... Mm-hmm. You know, like, and I think there's some really amazing stuff here. I don't think that Adult Books is the best X record. You know, I think We're Desperate's an amazing song. And I think it's like a great foretelling of hardcore kind of thing, in the same way that Bag Survive is like a hardcore song. But, you know, are they catchier than...
I don't know. I think the Avengers... I think Avengers is stronger than some of that stuff, but you're right. It's regardless of doing it even release for release, one thing you are even already showing is that, yeah, this Quintessence stuff is stacks up, if not better at points, like pretty much equal to favorably, you know, against any of that stuff.
So, well, there's a lot more Quintessence releases. Like, you know, maybe I shouldn't be comparing them side by side. Like, that's a dumb kind of debate because it is, like, one of the greatest punk labels of all time. And aesthetically, it's perfect. But, like, also, these Quintessence records look fucking great. Not all of them. Still, Perfect Youth has one of the worst covers ever, the Point of Six record. It's kind of become classic in its badness, I think.
Yeah, but at the same... Yeah. Yes, but it's not... Yeah, no, it sucks. But it's a good LP, though.
Great LP. It's, like, an amazing record. But the art is just, like...
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird. I mean, it's more weird.
It's not FOD bad, but it's bad.
Yeah. Is this Blue Northern? Like, I don't know this record at all.
Yeah, this one I don't know either. Isn't it funny that there's always these, there's always these few records here and again on these, like, infamous things I don't know.
Yeah.
This was also Polydor also. Wow.
This is one of those records that, like, you know, you buy, like, that, what's a psychedelic rock record on Mother? And now people want, but, like, at the same time, you're like, oh, wow, I found this record on Mother. And then you put it on, you're like, you're like, oh, wow, I found this Quintessence record. And then you're like, put it on, you're like, oh, there's a fiddle on it. Oh, there's a pedal steel guitar.
Oh, I don't know percussion. This UJ3RK5.
Oh, that's there. That band's fucking awesome.
It's a cool looking record. Yeah. I just don't know anything about it.
That Cover Boy single, I also think it looks amazing. I don't have
it. Yeah, you're right, though. For the most part, it does. Like, the Modernettes cover's great. Young Canadians record even looks cool.
All those pointed six, 7 inches.
Great. K-Tels is cool. It's
basic. I think that first pointed six. Like, also, that's the other thing. It's, like, so many good records on this by, like, bands. Like, Young Canadians, like, counting the K-Tels 7-inch, did, like, three great records.
Yep.
You know, pointed six did, what, three on this label? Well, including the LP, four. Five, you include that 7-inch American song.
Yep.
It's like, wow, it's like Vancouver, for a city of that population, put out a ton of stuff.
Agreed. I have no debate there. 100%. I'm with you on that. I'd never really thought about framing it in such a, like, a, I always liked the Quintessence of it. I never thought about stacking it up against some of the other whatever cities or catalogs, and it's just seeing it side by side, yeah, it holds up.
Yeah, definitely. And that's only one label. There's also Friends Records that did other stuff, and then there's, you know, others. But anyway, Chris, do we have any more points to get to tonight?
I think we're pretty good. I just wanted to whip through here and see if there was anything else. Not a major time, but just that Black Flag audition story thing's hilarious.
It's the best audition story. That's one of my favorite stories we've ever had told in the show.
Yeah, it's incredible.
All the stories about that guy sound amazing.
True.
It made me go and listen to Painted Willie.
And, I think I'm good on everything else. I think we touched on it pretty much everything I wanted to. I guess just the Psychotic Dick Bites is an amazing band
name. Yes.
I don't know. I'm good on everything. I don't know unless you wanted to touch on something.
No, I'm sure there's stuff we've forgotten, but that's what footnotes next week is for.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. Chris, how do they get in touch with us here to send stuff to our mailbag?
You can reach us at turnedoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
And we will be back next week with a conversation about Sam Bean from Iron and Wine. Are you an Iron and Wine fan at all,
Chris? Yeah, I like some of the stuff, like the early stuff I like in particular, but yeah.
We'll get I'm ready. I'm
interested to hear, where you're going to go with that.
It's going to be a good one. There's some cool connections. There's some surprise connections on this one.
All right, nice.
But that is next week on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can find me on various forms of social media, @LeftForDamian. If you'd like to support this podcast, please give it a rating or subscribe to it and follow it on whatever podcast format you are listening to this thing on right now. And that's it. Buy us those records. Baby Gopal on Pink and Homies on Vinyl by Insane Clown Posse. That would be a great way to support the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next week.